Hello, South Africa, and welcome to episode 4 of Diski Discussions. I'm your host, AB Bason. We've got another exciting podcast coming up this week as we unpack match day 3 of the DStv Premiership, preview the MTN 8 semi-final second legs, and 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers coming up this month. Joining me to discuss all of this and more is Kickoff.com journalist and content producer, Chad Kelly-Clate. Chad, before we get on to soccer discussions, I'd first like to congratulate you and your wife and thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to join me on this podcast. Firstly, how's the baby girl doing and how's the first 4 weeks of being a parent treated you?
Hey, B, thanks. It's good to be on the show making my debut. It's been such an incredible ride so far. 4 weeks have flown by, although the exhaustion is there already. But it's really been such a learning curve, you know, having to take responsibility for a new life and just nurture and care for it and make sure everything's fine. It's been quite enlightening, and I definitely feel like I've already grown so much. I've matured as a person, as an individual, and my whole perspective has already changed in these first 4 weeks.
Have you been able to take some time off, or have you just been working straight through? And how has it been juggling work and, you know, a newborn at the same time?
Look, it's difficult. As you know, our jobs, you don't really have working hours, so you have to try and squeeze in the little time you have and just spend it with the family. I haven't really taken much time off. I try and use most of my weekend to spend with him when there's not games or press conferences that I'm going into. The whole COVID situation has actually been a blessing because I get to do everything from home. So attend press conferences, watch the games, everything is done at home in the comfort of my home and I'm close to the family. So it hasn't been that difficult. Just juggling it and trying to squeeze in that little bit of time I get between loading stories or doing research or conducting interviews and stuff is priceless.
If we can rewind it back to when you were a young boy, you grew up in, I think, the Eastern Cape. Where did your journey in football start and your love for the game? Where does it come from? Where does it stem from?
Back to Port Elizabeth, probably in about, I think, 98. I was 6 years old. The youngest, smallest kid in an under-9 team. As many would know, the club Dane came from Glenville Celtic. I started there with the under-9 team as a six-year-old. But I think I got knocked over in my first match, and I ended up quitting because all the kids were bigger than me and I was so intimidated. And then I ended up coming back when I was 8, 9 years old and ready to play with under-9s. Because at that stage, there wasn't any younger team. It was under-9 or nothing. Mm. So, yeah, I came back and actually graduated to the under-13 team. And then I was just about to break into the provincial team. I was invited for trials. And I think it was a month or a few weeks before my parents decided they were going to relocate to Johannesburg in 2005. So I ended up moving with them. I ended up not going for the trials because even if I made it, I wasn't going to be able to continue with them. So I didn't go for the trials. I was gutted. That's the curveballs life throw at you and you have to just deal with it as it comes. So we moved up to Joburg. I struggled to find my feet here with a new school, new environment. I had no friends or anything. And my parents obviously didn't know many people either. So they moved up here mainly to support Dane because he was just starting his professional career. I couldn't find a club close by in Fourways. And Fourways High didn't have soccer as a school sport. So, you had to do a sport per term. So I ended up doing athletics during the winter season and then in the summer season, and I did hockey during the winter season. I just didn't have time to juggle those sports, school work, and trying to find a club and going to play there. And I guess that's how I ended up, you know, phasing out of football as a player.
But you still remained in the game, and you're a journalist today. How did that happen, and how big an influence did Dane have in your love for the game? Obviously, he went on to forge a very successful career in South African football.
Yeah, I mean, I think back and I actually realized that Dane was... I didn't actually grasp what was happening with Dane at the time. As a 13-year-old, he was just breaking into the SuperSport senior team under Putsomo Simane at the time. And I didn't really see it as, you know, if Dane can make it, I can make it sort of thing. I didn't see him as a football star as yet. I didn't really view sort of local football as like a professional career, like, you know, the way we saw the likes of Ronaldinho and Eto'o and those guys on the European stage, Beckham. And I always thought, you know what, if he makes it there, then I know, you know, he's made it. But when he started at SuperSport, I mean, obviously only knew Chiefs and Pirates at the time as well. So I followed him as I knew he was good. I knew he was a junior national team player, but I didn't see him making it, you know, to the heights he did. And for me, it was a case of, I mean, I didn't even realize the fame that came with it, because people were recognizing him in the street, but I didn't really take much note of it. And I just went about my schoolwork. My parents were very strict on with regards to me doing my schoolwork and you know, completing school and stuff, and sport really wasn't even an option for me at the time. So hence I took it easy. I didn't think that not being able to play was a big issue, but I finished school. I was very passionate about athletics. I ran 100 meter, 200 meter, 400 meter, and I did quite well at high school. I went to UJ, studied sports development my first year, and I did athletics as well. But it started dawning on me at that period when you know, I was in university and the kids I'd been playing with were now going for trials at bigger clubs and stuff. And I started feeling like, you know what, I should be a footballer as well. And it obviously affected all the regret that I didn't play for a club or anything like that started affecting me in terms of my studies. I wasn't passionate about it anymore. I stopped going to lectures at one stage. And I eventually dropped out of UJ after the first year. And then, yeah, because my parents were so strict about education, I was forced to go and study sports management at a technical college in Randburg, ETA. And, yeah, that's when I just, you know, they were more open to, like, lectures were, I think, from 9 till 12 or 1 o'clock. So I had a lot of free time around all those lectures and stuff. And I just started playing amateur football again. But, yeah, losing all those years of development really had a negative effect on me. And I felt like I was out of my depth playing with players, you know, 20-something, late 20s, their ability and their composure on the ball was, I mean, incredible for me. And I couldn't keep up anymore. And yeah, I stopped playing. And in my second year of studying my diploma, I met Melissa Reddy, who was the deputy editor at Kickoff magazine at the time.
Melissa actually also gave me my first job, funny enough.
Wow. Yeah, she's really paved the way for many of us. So
yeah.
Yeah, Dane was obviously at Pirates at the time. This was in 2012. Dane had just joined Pirates in 2010. So that's when his profile also started, you know, becoming big, and I started realizing, you know, the whole what was happening around me in terms of him making it as a footballer. And I was obviously well acquainted with all the players at Pirates. I'd been going with Dane to training and all that. So I had quite a good relationship with all of them. They were all very friendly towards me. And at the time, Melissa didn't have a driver's license, so she needed Dane to take her to training for a cover interview she did with Benny, and I think it was Jali or Roima, Mutsa. I'm not sure. I can't remember all the names. But I know the headline cover person was Benny. And I actually helped her coordinate the whole shoot on the training ground, getting Benny to come and do his pictures and do the interview and all that. And on our way home, we were speaking and she was sharing a bit more about what she does. And I actually joked with her and I asked her, don't you have a job for me? And that's when she mentioned that, oh, they're actually looking, they're searching for an intern. And she let me know, like, details and stuff. And then I was like, yeah, keen. And I took a number, and that's how I started. I jumped at the opportunity of an internship at Kickoff. I started out doing the Laugh Out Loud pages, which I don't know if many will remember, but I just had to curate a couple of jokes, funny stuff that happened on the football, on and off the field, in both internationally and locally. And my first research article was actually on Dane and the most decorated players, guys like Zlatan and all those. And I put a nice, I think it was a 200-word feature in the magazine. And yeah, I just grew from there, took on more work, started helping her more with interviews and cover shoots. And then I just, I got signed on a short-term contract. I guess I did well because then I got a long-term contract. And I ended up dropping out of my diploma studies in the end because I felt like, you know what, I'm in this industry, I'm doing well, I'm earning money. And I felt like I was ready to, you know, step out on my own. I don't need a qualification. So, yeah, I dropped out and I've been with Kickoff ever since. I haven't gone back to finish my studies. Every year I regret it and say, this year I want something under my belt. But yeah, you get so busy and caught up in everyday work that you don't really make time for anything else. So yeah, I've been in the industry for 8 years as a journalist now, content producer for Kickoff. And yeah, the experience and everything speaks for itself. Obviously, I've built a nice profile for myself and made inroads where I never thought I would actually. And yeah, just grateful for the journey and happy that I put my passion to work and actually made it work for me.
Yeah, if we can maybe just talk about some of that work and maybe about football this season. A lot has been written about Kaizer Chiefs and their transition from Ernst Middendorp to Gavin Hunt. They've started the season very slowly. Obviously, they can't sign any players. Where do you think they fell short over the last few weeks of last season? And how can Gavin Hunt improve, you know, the squad of players that he's going to have to work with until the end of the season?
Yeah, it's a very difficult one, AB. Obviously, the short pre-season, him having joined, you know, just a few weeks before the new season and the shortened pre-season due to COVID-19, obviously, all has its impact on the coach trying to instill his philosophy and in the uncertainty around their ban while they awaited the outcome of the appeal with Kaz. So I think, in a nutshell, yes, they've got the same squad that almost won the league last season. And a lot of people have been complaining, a lot of Chiefs fans have been complaining that, yeah, Gavin was meant to, you know, be this messiah sort of coming to Chiefs with his reputation. But the results just haven't been forthcoming with the same players that Ernst Middendorp used to get results last season. But one major factor is that, yes, Chiefs have the squad that finished second last season, but everyone else has strengthened. They lost 3-0 to Sundowns, a team that have made over 10 signings and top quality signings, two of them scoring on debut against Chiefs. And then the 3-0 against the Orlando Pirates as well. A lot of new signings in that Pirates setup. So, yes, they've got a good team, but not being able to strengthen like the others have done is obviously going to affect them. And so it's just going to take a little bit longer for them to find their rhythm. And yeah, I feel for Gavin not being able to add where he wanted to. He obviously had those the three players, Sifiso, Shanti, Nange and Peterson, training with him in the hopes that they could sign, but not being able to sign them as well. It threw a spanner in the works because he would have probably been planning around the three of them joining as well.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a while, but it's not cut and paste type of thing. You just take Middendorp's way of playing and use it again to get results. Gavin has a 3-year contract, and he's got to build something that's sustainable for him over the course of those 3 years. So it is going to take time, and really the Chiefs fans just need to be patient, and we all just need to see how he goes about, getting the best out of these plays. He obviously doesn't have Samir Nurkovic at the moment as well, who's also the subject of lots of transfer speculation. So it's going to be tough, but if there's one thing we can count on is Gavin Hunt getting the best out of players that are, sort of rejects almost. He's done it at Wits. He used sort of no-name players at SuperSport to win three titles back-to-back. And he's definitely got the pedigree to get players like Billiard firing again, players like Kambule, who arrived with a lot of expectation but hasn't quite reached it yet. I definitely think, given time, he can get a lot of players out of their shells and get them playing, a good brand of football again, rather than the one-dimensional style of play that they played under Middendorp last season, which, yes, got results, but is not sustainable.
You touched on Kama Biliat there, and he's obviously been very disappointing in his time at Kaizer Chiefs. He showed glimpses of brilliance towards the end of last season. He scored some important goals for them. He was really unlucky against Chippa United the other night when they won an own goal. He could have scored two or three, and he's missed quite a few big chances so far this season. What do you think needs to click for him, and how important is it for Chiefs going forward that a guy like him starts playing well, especially that, with the fact that they can't sign anyone until next year?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we all know Billet's quality and what he's produced last season and in the start of this season is obviously miles away from who he is and what he can bring to Kaizer Chiefs. The thing with Kama is it's such a delicate situation because, yes, he has the ability and the pedigree to lead Chiefs' attack, but he's always been that sort of confidence player. We saw him under Giovanni Salinas. I mean, he was scoring week in, week out because he got all this praise.
Bowing to him.
Exactly. He was labeled the Messi of Chiefs by Salinas. So, obviously, now having to be a team player is making it difficult for him. You have to admire what Pizzo did for him at Sundowns to get him firing, with the likes of Percy Tau, Keegan Dolly, and all the superstars they have at Sundowns. And now he's in a setup where everyone looks to him and all the expectation is on his shoulders. But he had a coach in Middendorp last season who wouldn't be treating anyone like superstars, and no one is bigger than the team. And then you have a Gavin Hunt now who is a motivational coach, but at the same time he's not gonna be bowing down to anyone. So it's just down to Billiard to really get his head down and working, pushing himself to the level that we all know he can get to. So that he can get his confidence back and firing again. It's probably mostly in his hands because we all know his conditioning is not up to standard. Last season also didn't help him much because Chiefs played aerial balls, which required him to do, off the ball running, but not much with the ball. And now he's playing a brand of football under Gavin where he's required to take control of the game and be that spark in attack for Kaizer Chiefs. So he's going to need to get his fitness up so that he can track back and get forward and be the sort of playmaker that we know he can be while also scoring goals. And we saw against Chippa United, yes, he hit the post a couple of times in the recent matches as well. But it's just a matter of confidence. He took a shot from outside the box that didn't even go near the target towards the end of the match on Wednesday evening. So it's really... you know, just to get his confidence up, and obviously his conditioning is another factor that Gavin Hunt will be working on.
How much do you think they've missed Samir Nukovic? Obviously, Castro was part of the CBD, you know, when Sundowns were so successful. He almost flies under the radar at Chiefs, but there should obviously be a lot of expectation on his shoulders as well, considering his quality. And how important will it be for Chiefs to get Nukovic back, you know, if he doesn't leave on a transfer?
Yeah, that's, I think the transfer speculation takes this whole thing, you know, to another level, because yes, he's important. Yes, he was important last season. But under Gavin, is he going to get, you know, the same opportunities with the style of play that Gavin wishes to play, which is mostly on the ground? It also asks questions of Nurkovic's, you know, character. Can he come out and perform with all the transfer speculation? He's obviously, he came with almost no reputation to Africa, to South Africa, and he quickly built up that reputation for himself to earn interest in the Gulf and in North Africa, as we've heard. So whether he can put that aside and actually perform is another conversation. And then secondly is obviously how he'll fit in, given Gavin's approach in the recent matches, where we've seen Chiefs playing a more sort of, you know, on the ground and combination play. We know he scored a lot of headers last season, profiting off those aerial balls. But can he play on the ground? Can he combine with his teammates on the ground and score as many goals with his feet as he did with his head last season? It's a big ask, but just his presence alone could also, you know, bring back the camaraderie in the team, knowing you have quality on the pitch. It takes a little bit of pressure off your teammates to try and make something happen, the likes of Manyama, the likes of Karma.
Yeah.
So his presence alone could actually lift the team again, knowing that they've got their top striker back. But yeah, it's all up to how he'll fit in with the new approach of Chiefs, and whether he can put the transfer speculation aside and perform on the pitch, because if his intention is to leave, he signed himself in a 3-year deal, so he shouldn't have done so if his intention was to play one season in the PSL, get his profile out there, and then move abroad again. So he's contracted to Chiefs, and everyone expects him to return and come and do the goods on the pitch, regardless of the speculation out there.
Then their opposition this weekend in the MTN 8 second leg, Orlando Pirates, their Soweto rivals. Obviously, our prayers go out to Joseph Zinbao and his family during, you know, what is a very difficult time for him. But back in South Africa, Pirates have started, you know, quite solidly this season. They made a lot of signings, and it's been their intention to bring those signings straight into the fray. I mean, Schlotzwaye was handed the captain's armband straight away. Have you been surprised by their approach in how they've integrated their new players?
Look, it's with Pirates, it's also sort of a honeymoon phase of sorts. I remember Zinbauer's didn't have a preseason last season, coming in December and taking over from Rulani. So, you know, that extra few weeks to work with the team takes us back to when he just arrived at Pirates, winning those, going those 10 games unbeaten. I think it was 10 or close to 15 even. And now he's got a bunch of new signings, quality signings, I might add. And it's for him to, you know, sort of mix and match and see how things go. The issues will come when game time becomes an issue now, because some players are not getting the minutes they would have hoped for, whether they were there last season or they knew this season. And Zinbauer's policy has always been to rotate, giving players a chance to prove themselves. And, you know, he's very, very rarely played a consistent 11. And we've seen it now with Fadlu as well, a couple of changes after taking the interim reins in Zinbauer's absence. So it's going to be difficult, but on the bright side, if Pirates can continue in the CAF Confederations Cup and maintain their status in the competition, then it will definitely come in their favour. because then you don't deal with any sort of frustrations in the camp. Yeah. But if they don't do well in the MTN 8, by winning the MTN 8 and then obviously advancing in the CAF Confederation Cup, they will have quite a headache in terms of, you know, keeping everyone happy in the camp, because they've got quite a big squad at the moment, and it's not small players, it's not youngsters that have come through, it's quite established, experienced players that have joined the club. So they will be expecting to get the minutes they have been in past seasons.
On this podcast, we've spoken a lot about Sundowns and about Pitsa Mosamane leaving to Al Ahly, but they've made a solid start. I mean, by everyone's expectations, you know, they've got a great squad. They're top of the log now. They haven't conceded a goal, I think, in 6 games. They haven't conceded a goal this season. How impressed have you been by their start? And do you think, you know, this season, you know, considering the how other Soweto teams have started, do you think they can really run away with the title and win it quite comprehensively?
Look, they might have lost Pitso, but they've obviously got a very astute tactician in Steve Campela that they've roped in. It would seem they've just carried on with the momentum from last season, but I do think they could still go through a hiccup where, you know, where once Steve Campela gets his groove, and, you know, he has a bit more influence on the squad, things could change up a little. And I wouldn't be jumping at the gun to say, yes, Sundowns are favourites. Yes, they beat the Chiefs 3-0, and they beat Cape Town City 2-0. But they showed sort of signs of, you know, stuttering already against newcomers TTM. I know it could have been a banana peel situation where, you know, the newcomers, you sort of underestimate them and then you end up losing. But they really didn't show the sort of, you know, the Sundowns we know under Pitso. It was similar to how they performed when they just started in the bubble. Perhaps it was the quick turnaround of games that might have affected them. But at the end of the day, they've also got quite a big squad with a lot of signings. And though Kermit and Shalulile have already, you know, shot out the blocks, they're still going to find their feet and to get to know the combinations. I mean, George Maluleka coming in, they've got Jali already showing signs of form early on, the type of form he showed in the bubble. So it's a lot of sort of intricate workings on the inside. You know, Rulani Mokoena is obviously very sort of pedantic about, you know, his tactics and his strategies and stuff. So once they sort of, I'm sure they are going to change things up from what Pitso was doing, because in one way Pitso would have had the final say, and now they don't have that sort of leadership where they've got that leader that has the final say and says, okay, this is how we're going to do it. Now it's sort of a three-pronged co-coaches structure where each one possibly has equal say, and they might deviate from what they used to. So I definitely feel, yes, they could be riding on some momentum at the moment, but they are going to become, you know, sort of speed bumps along the way. And it'll be interesting to see how they navigate around those in terms of their selection as well, keeping players that are on form while also offering opportunities to the new signings and younger players that have come through in recent times. So how they work is obviously going to depend a lot on whether they also stay in the CAF Champions League this season. And not having the Telkom knockout, already they've out to the MTN 8 and not getting silverware there. So it's going to be a long road for them, fighting for the league, which only ends in May, the Champions League, which also probably ends May, June, and then the Nedbank Cup, which only comes much later in the season. So this marathon style is really going to take away from the intentions of, you know, continuing with that momentum of winning silverware.
Just before we get on to Bafana Bafana, just your predictions for the MTN 8 semi-final second legs this weekend. Do you see an upset happening? Obviously, SuperSport Celtic is still deadlocked at 1-1. But in Pirates take a huge lead into this weekend. Do you see any chance for Chiefs? Can they turn it around? And SuperSport going to Bloemfontein, do you feel that they can? I mean, they've experts in this competition, they're now to win it. So do you think it will be them that progress with Pirates?
Look, interesting you say progress with Pirates. I don't think you can write Chiefs off at all at the moment. There's definitely, we've seen this, how funny football can be. Pirates have their own issues that they're contending with. Obviously losing Joe Zinnbauer while he's back in Germany is obviously gonna cause have an effect on them, because Fadlu is basically the only coach on the bench now. Yes, Darian Wilken is a qualified coach and he's more known to be an analyst for the club. But whether, you know, the relationship will sort of dictate how things will be done on Saturday is also another thing we'll look forward to, because you never know, Fadlu might be seeing this as an opportunity to also, you know, stake his claim. Having been a head coach at Maritzburg United, he might just want to change some things, knowing with a 3-0 cushion that he has some room to play around with. But at the same time, if Chiefs score first on Saturday, the whole complexion of the game could change, and I don't see why they can't, you know, pull three goals back and turn the tie on its head. So I definitely won't write Chiefs off completely. Yes, they've been struggling for goals, but it's just a matter of time and a matter of luck before they find the back of the net and you know, the floodgates possibly open. So that one's very exciting on Sunday. But yeah, whether SuperSport or Celtic goes to the final, that's also another tight game. I mean, that 1-1 draw was end-to-end stuff. Both sides, you know, obviously SuperSport having won the MTN 8 last year, and then Celtic playing in the Nedbank Cup final, both sides have the pedigree of going all the way to the final this time around. They aren't new to this. So it's going to be a highly tactical battle between John Maduka and Caetano Tembo. But ultimately, I think SuperSport's history of you know pipping these games and making it to a final by hook or by crook, mm-hmm. I think they definitely have the experience to sort of pip Celtic. Although I do think it might go to penalties with another 1-1 draw on Saturday. And then, yeah, we're all hoping for an exciting end to the weekend in the Soweto derby. No one likes a dull derby and not having anything to play for. So if Pirates do run away with it, it's obviously going to be a very boring game. But hopefully we see Chiefs come back. And I dare say this, but I think Chiefs have a chance of going through to the final as well.
The big call. We'll hold you on your word there, Chad. Just lastly, Bafana Bafana, it's now been confirmed that both qualifiers will be played in South Africa against Sao Tome and Princep. Obviously the birthplace of Wolves head coach Nuno Espirito Santo, for those who don't know.
I do.
Well, fact of the day. The first game we played in Durban and then Port Elizabeth, a place that you know very well, Chad. What do you think? I mean, it's very difficult for Bafana Bafana, you know, a very unknown team, unknown entity, very small nation. It will be expected of us to really, you know, to thump them. But we've been in this situation before where we struggle against small teams. What do you make of Molefe and Seki's team? And do you think it will be an easy 6 points for us?
Look, it's obviously, we know Bafana have slipped up before, and we've sort of gotten used to you know, them not delivering on expectations. But I think this should really be a cut and dry thing. Sao Tome is not well ranked. They've got nearly no history in terms of, you know, their quality or their pedigree on the international stage. So the fact that that both legs are going to be played on home soil for Bafana should count massively in their favour. Had it been a case of fans being allowed in the stadium, I do think it would have been a different scenario, because we've seen Bafana choke in front of a home crowd so many times. But the fact that it's behind closed doors obviously plays in their favour big time, and on home soil as well. So I don't see us slipping up in any way. Some surprise selections in Molefi's camp, but nothing we haven't seen before. I mean, we've seen some surprise selections before, but in this case, I don't see that sort of hampering the team. I think the lineup should still be solid, and we should still see a strong Bafana team against Sao Tome. So if we can get our goal difference up as well, having lost to Ghana in the opening round of fixtures, this is definitely an opportunity for us to you know, make up ground and put ourselves in a good position ahead of the final two fixtures of the qualification campaign, so that we can, you know, wrap it up and march on straight to AFCON in 2022.
Well, Chad, thanks. We appreciate your insights and your knowledge in the game. Good luck with work and juggling nappies and all that comes with having a new baby. Thanks for joining us, and good luck. And hopefully we can see, you know, a lot of exciting soccer in the next few weeks.
Yes, thanks so much, AB. Was always good, you know, coming together and having these football chats and sharing our knowledge. But it's a very exciting time. Things still haven't gone back to normal, and we look forward to an enthralling season ahead, and hopefully we get to see fans back in the stadium soon as well. But thank you so much, and all the best to you guys as well.
Thank you, and stay safe. In next week's episode, I'll be joined by former Bafana defender Matthew Booth to chat about his career and the state of South African football today. If you have any questions or things you'd like us to discuss on Disky Discussions, please hit me up at AB_Basson on Twitter or Instagram. Aware.